Welcome back, everyone, to Fireside Yankees. We have another episode talking about spring training because spring training action is underway. We have games under these players' belts. We'll talk about some of the things that stood out to us throughout spring training. Gerrit Cole threw his first live bullpen since returning from Tommy John surgery, so he has not faced hitters up until this point, until the end of 2025 spring training, or his end of the 2025 spring training schedule. He hit 97 miles per hour. We'll discuss that. We'll talk about the three best pitching prospects in the organization who all pitched already so far in the Grapefruit League schedule, and some of our takeaways and positives so far from spring. All of that and more right here on Fireside Yankees. Make sure you like, subscribe, turn on that notification bell. To my left, I've got the amazing Chris Drew, the one and only Jacob, and that's baseball, if you know him from that. And we're really excited to get into this. We'll start with Chris. Chris, how you doing, man?
Really good, man. Really, really excited to have baseball to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. Jacob, I know you've been hustling today. It's been a grind.
Oh, dude, I'm stuck in the middle of that New Jersey blizzard. It is brutal. I've shoveled multiple driveways today. I got the hat on to cover up my hair because my hair is disgusting. It was hidden underneath my New York Giants beanie all day. So I am exhausted. Worked this past weekend on getting this video out for you guys, this top 50 prospects video featuring the one and only Aaron Judge. And I thought I was going to have a day off today, but nope, snow. So here we are. But at least we get to talk about some spring training baseball. So we're back.
Yeah, man. And I think, first and foremost, if you're in this snowstorm, if you're in this blizzard, stay safe. Stay inside when you can. It is terrible. I fortunately did not have to shovel. I was working the Met game, actually. I was clipping for Mets during the when my parents, when my dad and my brothers went out to shovel. Got three brothers, so they can handle it themselves. My little brothers, they're 14. They're 15, sorry. They can handle it. They're
it's
good.
Like prime shoveling age, man.
Yeah, like they play football. They wrestle. They're good. They're good.
My advice is, I have the contrary advice to Ryan. I say order DoorDash as much as possible. Make those DoorDashers get the food for you. And don't tip them.
Dude, if you DoorDash and don't tip in this weather, you are like the worst person of all time. Like, you might be like
I used to drive DoorDash during COVID, and it was the richer the person who was ordering, the worse the tip was, I swear. One time I delivered Panda Express, this guy with the 3-car garage, and he did $0 tip. I said, oh my God, I almost went back and egged this place. I was so mad.
Well, you know what, man? We'll slide for you next time. We'll slide for you. We'll bring our eggs. We'll slide for you. Now, a very rich guy threw a live bullpen session in Gerrit Cole, who reached 96.9 miles per hour. We'll round up there. We'll say it's 97.
That's a round up before triple digits.
Yeah, and also because it's the headline. Like, we're going to put the title, Gerrit Cole hit 97. Oh, my God. Something like that. But I actually found it really encouraging that he's on a mound facing hitters. He only did one inning of work. Didn't throw any breaking balls, so he's not up to that point in his progression yet. Reporters who were at the live bullpen session said that the radar gun was around 95 to 97 for Cole. So pretty solid velocity. We'll start with Jacob here. Jacob, with this live bullpen, with some of the velocity readings early on, have your expectations for Gerrit Cole changed at all?
Not really, honestly. Like, it obviously is exciting to see, but one inning of live bullpen is definitely a far cry from real game action. And even Gerrit, after the when people were asking him about it, because it is interesting to see him get up to 97, he said he felt like he did before 2024, I believe. But he also said, we have to pump the brakes a little bit. He's taking it slow. He's following the advice. He's not going to come back earlier than expected. He's going to follow the timeline. And I think we have to kind of be the same way as fans, just see where he is when he gets back in, whenever it is, late May, early June. And if the stuff looks good there, then that's when I'll get excited. But as of right now, I'm not expecting him to be the same guy he was in 2023 at this point. Hopefully he's like a 350 ERA type of pitcher, like good middle of the rotation guy. And if he's better than that, that's great, but I don't think we can anticipate him being an ace coming back from this. But who knows? He's Gerrit Cole. He's got a Hall of Fame level talent, so anything's possible.
I'm kind of right there in lockstep with you. You know, I enjoy hearing Gerrit Cole talk about kind of his pitching process, because he's someone that's like super in tune with his body, super in tune with his mechanics. I like the good old unk thing going over the head now, you know, to get some extra UCL activation or whatever. Don't even... Jokes. But no, dude, like to see him hitting 97, it is definitely, okay, like, this feels good. Like, I feel like we're not going to see the massive drop off that I think some Yankee fans are worried about from Gerrit Cole when he gets back, is kind of where I'm at. But yeah, mid 3.5s, and it's in line with, you know, the first time he threw on the mound, there was like the Boone lip reading, like that's 96, and it's good to see that kind of on the gun again. So I'm excited about Garrett, but I agree he's not going to rush himself because he is someone who, you know, is really in tune with his body and really in tune with his mechanics, and he will take the advice.
Yeah, and I think Garrett Cole, I know he's probably itching to come back, but as he reiterated in his press conference, I believe it was 2 weeks ago, it was the day before Valentine's Day that he did this, the 13th on a Friday. He mentioned that the timeline for him will remain 14 to 18 months. But I will say, the velocity being where it is this early, I feel good about Garrett Cole coming back and being that frontline caliber starter, because I think velocity is the biggest question I have with him. How does his body look? How does his, or not body, how does his body react to being a little older, coming back from UCL surgery? He's never had Tommy John in his life. He's never been out, I think, for this long of a period of time. So yeah, I think that I feel like I'm not that I'm to the point where I don't have questions about this rotation. Like, that's, you have to have questions about every rotation, even the Dodgers rotation, even the Red Sox rotation, those top rotations in the league. I feel like I do have fewer questions about whether a healthy Garrett Cole will be an effective Garrett Cole. Whether he's healthy or not, we'll see. But if he's healthy, if he's on the mound, I expect him to be very effective. With that being said, though, if you guys had to guess when he does come back from Tommy John surgery, or when he does hit a major league mound again, the first time he steps, whether it's in the Bronx, whether it's on the road, when will that first time be? Chris, we'll start with you.
Mid to late June. I think that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, I think I'm probably about the same time. Hopefully it's June. Hopefully we don't have any setbacks in that sense. But I don't think they're going to push him. Maybe if there's... I remember in 2024, they brought him back to the majors, I think probably one or two starts before he should have been up because our rotation was thin at the time. And maybe there's a situation where that happens if we do need him to take a rehab start in the majors. It'll be in early June, but hopefully that's not the case. Hopefully we have a good enough rotation situation that we don't need to rush him up, because in 2024, when he did that, he came back up. Those first three or four starts were not good. They weren't the same guy. And then he started found his groove later. So I'd like him to get the full rehab in the minors if possible, try to get him built up as much as we can before he makes his first start. So yeah, I'd hope for like a mid late June target date.
My exact target date, it is going to be June 5th on Friday. Why? Number one, the Yankees are going to be coming back from a road trip, a pretty extensive road trip. They'll go to Kansas City, then Oakland. So going out to KC, then going out, or not Oakland, sorry, Sacramento. Sacramento now. They're going to come back. They're going to play the Guardians for three. And then on Friday, they start a three-game set at home against the Red Sox. And I couldn't think of a more picture perfect cinematic, like, put this guy through the ringer early. Now, you could also argue that maybe just give him the Guardian start the day before, let him like get an easier start.
I don't need to throw Garrett Cole into the ringer. He's been through the ringer.
It's aura, dude. You got an aura
start
farm.
That lines up with his rehab. Don't if Booney's making the aura play, he goes about 3 days rest.
Aura minute for play.
No, but in all seriousness, the first time he like does his crouch, like, you know, he kind of like crouches in front of the mound after his warm up right before, the first time I see him do that on Yes, I'm going to like freak out, man. The first time I see, like, I'm going to, oh man, dude, it's going to be electric. And I think there's just something special to a Garrett Cole start, man. There's something about him. He's so surgical. It's a different watching experience, you know, like it's different, man. And I do hope that I don't think they will, but I do really hope they don't rush him. Like, I don't view this earlier than expected, maybe live bullpen, as, oh wow, he's going to be back in April, but more of like, okay, so when we get him back, I think he's going to be in really good condition versus, as Jacob noted, when he came back the first time in 2024, he looked bad. He looked like a bad pitcher. He looked terrible the first few starts. I think that we're going to get that sharper version of Cole. Like, let him get through everything he's got to get through. Then I do find it interesting that they're going to get him, they could get him some Grapefruit League action. I don't know what that even looks like. I don't know I don't know how that would fit with the timeline, but I'm excited, man. I'm excited that Garrett Cole is where he's at right now. And I'm hoping that he takes his time, he does what he has to do, he checks every single box, and he comes back looking like the Yankee ace. Any final thoughts you guys have on Mr. Cole, former Cy Young winner, Garrett Cole?
Were you surprised by 97, either of you, early on?
Yes, I was.
I mean, not really. We don't have much insight to where he was at this winter. And it's, again, it's just like a side session. Or a live BP. So yeah. I'm not that. I don't put much stock into it.
I was surprised that he was 97 this early. But I feel like a lot of the Yankee guys have been kind of cranking velo. I mean, Ryan Weathers, what, hit 98.5?
Yeah. I mean,
Carlos LaGrange hit 115.
I mean, the thing with Cole is he didn't really have a normal offseason. He's just been doing the throwing program that he would have been doing at any point in time. So I don't think the timeline is that. Surprise! I don't know. If he's sitting 97 in June, he's back. That's like, oh, we got 2023 Cole back. This is for real. But until that happens, I'm not.
Yeah. What is he sitting like 95? But he got up to 97.
Oh, that'd be fantastic, dude. I need that back.
See, the thing for me is that like I just expected him to lose velo. Like I didn't like. I guess maybe it's because I think I was the most pessimistic of the three of us on what he would look like, or like had the most question marks about how he'd look like when he was healthy again. And like for me, this is kind of like, okay, big piece of information. Like, I don't like to assume anything with a 35-year-old coming back from Tommy John surgery. I couldn't even assume the velocity was going to be there.
I guess knowing that he has it in the tank somewhere is a possibility. Like, if he came back throwing 91, 92, it'd be like, oh, I don't know here. But the fact that he has it is cool. So, but I mean, like, it's still Garrett Cole. He's a Hall of Fame talent arm. And we've got like, The rehab process is so much better now than it was like even 5-10 years ago that we're already seeing him come back this quickly to that video.
Yeah.
So it is nice. It is nice. It's comforting. I'll say that because I'm not putting too much stock into it, but it's comforting that we don't have to wait for him. Like, oh, is he going to be at 91, 92? Like, it's comforting that we're not that concerned about it right now.
Yeah. Again, I'm excited, man. I'm really, really, really excited. I think this is a good point for us to talk about the future, though. We looked into not the past necessarily, but we looked at what who Garrett Cole was and hope that we get that back. Let's talk about what could be with Elmer, LaGrange, and Hess, who have all pitched already so far in the Grapefruit League. We're going to go in chronological order as to when they pitched. So we'll start with Elmer Rodriguez, who had three innings pitched against the Orioles in the Yankees Grapefruit League opener. He did not give up a single hit. He had one strikeout, no walks, a lot of ground balls. I think it was a 70% ground ball rate. He allowed three hits. He did face a lineup including Gunnar Henderson, Pete Alonso. I think all nine of the players who were in that lineup had major league experience, and six of them are projected opening day starters for the Orioles on Fangraphs right now. Chris, we'll start with you, man. What did you see from this Elmer start? How impressed were you with this performance?
I was impressed. The pitchability's there. You know, obviously, like, he's not the same kind of showstopper LaGrange is in terms of, like, on the radar gun, but everything looked pretty good. I mean, the changeup, getting a whiff rate of 40%, I think is a huge plus. You know, 71% strikes, huge plus. I mean, he just does the things that, like, that I've heard, honestly, that we've all talked about, and Ryan and I have talked about at great length. He is your pitcher's pitcher, and he's kind of growing into his own, and he feels like a guy that's on schedule. And I guess I don't know where we are all at, but he's a guy that I expect to probably pitch this year for the Yankees. So,
yeah, I would assume he makes at least a few starts for us this year.
I mean, when you made the comment about, like, you know, you're hoping that this rotation's in a good enough place where you don't feel like you had to push up Garrett Cole, I'm thinking about Elmer Rodriguez. Okay, like, if you are kind of in a weird spot and you need to – and you want to keep Garrett Cole on schedule, I think I would feel good with pulling Elmer Rodriguez up for a start. So that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, I think the key with him – the strikeout stuff is – I'm not sure what it's going to be like at the major league level. So it is going to be a matter of keeping the ball in the park, keeping the ball on the ground. And based on what we saw on Friday, I think he's shown that he has the mix that he can do that if he's executing. And it's just a matter of how effectively can he do that. I don't think this guy is ever going to be like a top-of-the-rotation arm. But if he's a solid, like, mid-back-end rotation guy, like high threes, low fours ERA, making all his starts, keeping the ball on the ground, that's pretty much all we need from him on this team this year. And that would be fantastic. That would be a fantastic outcome for him, because it's tough to not have that level of elite stuff and make these top 100 prospect rankings these days. But Elmer does it because he has that deep mix, because he is so good at limiting the damage contact. And hopefully this year he gets to show that at the major league level.
I think what I was the most impressed by was the ability for him to just go after guys. He was attacking the zone consistently. I felt as if I was watching Rodriguez and I went, yeah, he belongs. Like, he fits in. Seeing him pitch against Gunnar Henderson, seeing him pitch against Pete Alonso, seeing him pitch against Tyler O'Neill, these guys who have had really strong seasons in pretty recent memory. And I was like, yeah, he belongs here. This is a guy who should be a big leaguer. This is a guy who should be a pitcher of significance for the Yankees at some point this year. I do think there are some areas of his game where he's going to need a little more refinement. I do think, you know, finding more of the comfort locating the sweeper down away to righties. But I also sit back and go, okay, but this is a spring start. Like, I don't know if he's trying to work on things. He's getting ready for the World Baseball Classic. There are a lot of changeups, like an obscene amount of changeups relative to what you would expect anybody to throw, especially against righties. But again, it's just the ability to keep the ball on the ground, the strike throwing abilities. If he's someone who strikes out, I'm just putting out some numbers out there just in my head now. 22 to 23% of batters faced, ground ball rate around 50%, walking around 7% of batters faced. Like, that's a firmly above average big league starter. That's kind of how I envision Elmer. I was very, very impressed with the way he handled himself against big league competition. Did you guys have any final thoughts on Elmer?
Does he make another start for us before the WBC, or is that going to be his only one?
I was under the impression this was going to be his only one, but I don't
know. Okay.
I would assume it's his only one because there are other guys who have to get their starts in. And I also think, like, Yoshida already reported for Team Japan. Okay. I imagine...
No, they're starting a little bit earlier. Cause...
Oh, right, yeah. I don't know.
They have to fly over there.
I guess we'll see. I'm not sure. It's not an announced... They don't have an announced plan, but I do know the only thing we have confirmed is that he will be used as a starting pitcher in that tournament, and that the Yankees would not allow him to pitch in the tournament if he was not used as a starting pitcher. So, yeah.
So, yeah, in terms of what we saw from him, it was nice to see what we saw from him, but I'm not putting too much stock into the results. Obviously, it was the first spring training game. The difference is WBC. That's real competition.
Yes.
That's going to be real. That's real game action. And even though it is early, like, I'm not going to put as much stock as I would into a real major league game. But that elevation of importance of the actual game itself will make me take a closer look at, like, what he's actually able to get done against. It depends on who he's facing too. But if he's facing real lineups with the Puerto Rico, then I'll take a look at the results and say, hey, that's interesting to me.
Yeah, I'm going to be curious to see Elmer Rodriguez facing, like, what Elmer Rodriguez is, hey, I'm going out there and I have to pitch for my life. What does that look like? Like, I want to see what it looks like. We got a little taste of that in AAA where he pitched a playoff game. He got beat up pretty bad in that playoff game. Love to see what it looks like in this upcoming WBC. We'll move on to Carlos Lagrange, who I think is easily, like, the most eye-popping. We talked about him last week, the 102.6 to Aaron Judge. We saw more impressive velocity. I would say probably the least impressive results of the group, like in terms of ERA, strikeout to walk rates, those kinds of things. But I did like how good, like, I thought his repertoire looked utterly dominant on paper. And that's a really good sign considering he's throwing the major league ball. Chris, we'll start with you, man. How did you feel about Lagrange's outing against the Tigers? What'd you see? What'd you like? What'd you think he needs to work on?
First off, it's fun. It's like must-watch television right when he pitches. I mean, obviously, like, everyone has all eyes on the gun. I thought it looked pretty good. It was encouraging. Definitely not as refined as Elmer, to me at least. The changeup looked filthy. I mean, my favorite, I think, tweet of the day was Jacob's tweet after the changeup. Like, just kind of the eye test. It looks ridiculous. And he kind of, I mean, no surprise, he kind of gave us what we thought he would give us in terms of, like, fastball velo. Some wildness in there at times, but overall guy that's easy to get really, really excited about. So I kind of defer to you guys on some of the analytics stuff, but for eye test, it felt like, okay, no surprises here. I understand.
Yeah, I will say the results weren't that encouraging. The stuff looked really good, but he wasn't getting many chases, wasn't getting as many whiffs as you would like with his fastball velo and shape. But I mean, he'd still, like, he had a solid outing. It wasn't like he was bad out there in terms of results. But yeah, the stuff, like, you could see a lot of people after this were like, oh, this guy's got to be in the bullpen, which, like, I totally see the vision because he does. He looks like Betances up there at times. But I don't know if he could get the command figured out, because definitely, like, he allowed that home run in his second, I think it was the second inning of work.
And
that
was just a changeup.
Dude, changeup right, like, that was the juiciest pitch you could throw. So if he can get, keep that changeup down, get the fastball located on that top plane of the plate, that's all he has to do, because, like, realistically, he has the stuff to get it done. It's where he's locating it. And in terms of what we saw, like, we saw what he could be and what he is right now in terms of the progress of his career. So he definitely has things to work on, but the ceiling is there.
I've got to say, when in regard to his pitch mix, the thing I was most encouraged by, I looked at that, the movement plot. Hey, the fastball shape didn't change much. Like, there are a lot of, and this is like a consistent theme, and I'm going to highlight this. I got to give props to the Yankee pitching development. Guys come up from the farm system, and you don't get these dramatic changes in pitch shape that you usually get from guys going from AA to AAA, then the big leagues. Cam Schlittler's fastball was completely unaffected by the jump to the big leagues. LeGrand Hayes' fastball remained almost completely ineffective from the big league ball. Elmer's fat four-seamer is probably the one that got the most affected, but I also wonder the accuracy of some of these Statcast readings, because I was looking at like Hess's pitch chart, and I saw like some sinkers that they measured like 18 inches of cut, which is like, no, probably mislabel. But I also think Elmer just like generally doesn't have good four seam shape. In general, it's just like I've been pretty impressed with the way that the Yankees young guys have looked with their fastball shapes. But, you know, specific to LeGrand Hayes, he's got a really good sweeping slider. He's got a good gyro slider. He's got an awesome changeup, man. Like, as Jacob hinted, not hinted at, he stated, I mean, like, the command of that pitch, when he leaves it up, like, it's going to get hammered. But when he's able to throw that pitch down in the dirt in two strike counts, he's going to get big swings and misses. The ability to buckle guys, I don't know if you saw the clip from Pitching Ninja where there's a sweeper that he throws.
That three-pitch sequence, yeah.
Yeah, dude, and it's like, I think that hitter saw his life flash before his eyes. Like, reputation matters. The fact that Carlos LeGrand Hayes is this tall, hard-throwing, wild pitcher,
was that the Colt Keith at-bat?
That Colt Keith at-bat, he swung over a changeup for a strikeout. I'm talking about the one where LeGrand Hayes throws, like, a breaking ball. I think it was a sweeper.
He went 101, then he went sweeper.
Oh, yeah.
Right, and it starts in, and it breaks out. LeGrand Hayes' sweeper has so much lateral movement, it's crazy. He's just so physically gifted, and it would be such a shame if the Yankees gave up on the starting thing without giving him multiple years to at least try and have that door open for him. I don't think the Yankees will do that, but I think it's really, I guess, on Luis Gil comparisons, no, does not work. It just doesn't work. You have
on another level, dude.
That, and also he's got four pitches. He's got four average to above average pitches, if not
how
double pluses.
Do we see guys that throw that hard at four pitches?
Yeah, especially at this age, too, where you don't expect these guys to really know how to develop a repertoire when they have that fat. Like, he could have thrown that fastball and nothing else for the first, like, through the low minors and been fine. The fact that he has, like, four quality pitches at this point is very impressive, and it shows that he's coachable in that sense, that he's able to develop these pitches. Honestly, the most interesting thing to me, though, in this start, anytime he fell behind, it felt like he was going to the sweeper as, like, the strike-throwing pitch. And that's obviously unique to – not many pitchers do that, right? Most pitchers are going to the fastball if they want to get one over. And he did. He landed, like, I think it was, like, seven sweepers for called strikes or something crazy. Like, that was, like, half of his sweepers that he threw were called strikes. So if that's his go-to get-over pitch, that's interesting to me, because it could be something that major league hitters jump on. But it also could be something that major league hitters aren't used to, and they still have to respect the 100, 101, so he could get it over. So it's definitely something that I want to look forward to in the future. I want to see how he uses it this year in AAA, see if he's going to that sweeper as his reliable pitch out of that repertoire. But I definitely, it is unique to him out of our starting pitching prospects.
On the broadcast, they brought it up real briefly. It's like, you know, when someone throws this hard and has this many pitches, sometimes the control thing can come later on because you got to get the feel for it when you are that hard of a thrower. I just thought that was interesting. That's what made me think about, like, how often do we see guys that throw this hard at this many pitches?
He's a physical specimen. I think there's going to be a lot of helium behind him. He sat 100 in this start with 17 and a half inches of ride on the fastball. Like, I saw, like, some comments, and I've seen this on social media. I understand it. Like, I really do understand it. I don't think this is coming out of a place of malice or whatever, or with malicious intent. A lot of people are reacting to this hype and saying, you're putting too much pressure and too much helium into this guy over what is practice and spring training starts. And I agree if your conclusion is that he's a big leaguer right now. He did not look like a big leaguer in that start. He looked like someone who does not belong in the big leagues right now, which is exactly what I expect him to look like, because I don't think he's a big leaguer right now. But the stuff he has, you cannot teach. He has outlier stuff. There are not starting pitchers in baseball who have that kind of velocity with those kinds of shapes, with that kind of pitch depth and depth and mix. There are not. There is nobody like Carlos Lagrange in baseball right now on the planet. Pro, minor league, major league, college, whatever it may be. And when you have a physical outlier, yes, you pay attention to that. There's a reason why Spencer Jones was drafted in the first round. There's a reason why Aaron Judge was somebody who you had to keep tabs on, even in an era where we undervalued power and overvalued hit tool, right? Like, this is a physical outlier. We have to pay attention to those. We have to.
I think most, like, rational Yankee fans and also rational baseball fans, that it's not so much anointing him a star right now, but I think a lot of us can sit here and watch Carlos and see, oh, I see the vision, right? And yeah. And I think seeing him in pinstripes throwing this hard, it's like, oh, I can see the vision. I think that's kind of where most people are. At least that's where I'm at.
Yeah, and I'm also interested in he threw over 50 pitches in his first spring outing, and it's still February, man. It's still February, and he's throwing, sitting 100 and through 50 pitches. The third inning, he was down a couple of ticks, but he was still sitting 98 with 18 inches of IVB. Like, that's still elite. And if he has if he's like sitting 98 and gets to the 100, 101, 102 when he needs it, then that's perfect for a starting pitcher. So,
do you guys think he should throw the fastball more? Do you like him 35% fastball, or do you want that higher?
I think it depends on how he's commanding it.
Okay.
Yeah. I think I'm cool with it being 35 to 45%. I actually don't think he should be a super high fastball usage guy because fastballs don't miss bats the way they used to. Guys hit velo. Like, it was crazy seeing Kevin McGonigal, like, seeing, oh, okay, middle away. Oh, boom, seventh to left field.
Dude, that's Kev, though.
If this was fireside baseball, like, I'm going to tell you right now, the guy I actually walked away the most impressed with in that game was not LeGrand. He was clearly McGonigal. Like, that guy is a fucking freak.
Great swing, I went to see him and Max Clark in Akron and met both of them, and I love both those two, man.
That guy's awesome. That guy's incredible. It's crazy that he's so good and he's not the consensus number one prospect in baseball because of Connor Griffin. Like, that's how the 1 and 2 in this prospect class is ridiculously good.
Disgusting.
Again,
we
Dax Kilby.
Baseball for that though.
We do have to get you on that for that.
Yeah, my hot take for that, my fireside baseball take is I think McGonigal might be a better prospect than Griffin.
Well, he might be. He's really good.
He's probably better right now. He's just older, right?
Yeah, I mean, I see the vision with Griffin. I see the vision, but people are anointing him as like, oh, he's going to come up this year and be a 4 or 5 win player. And I think he's going to come up this year and strike out 30% of the time. That could improve in the future, but I don't think his bat is close.
Yeah,
to
we don't do any Pirates. We are pro Pirates over here.
I look at Bobby Witt Jr. as like the, like, hey, he had like a weird first year, wasn't like great. And it kind of clicks in the second year, and then he's one of the best players in baseball.
He's like 20 years old, so it's like he's plenty of time to
develop. I think he's only 19, right?
Is he only 19?
Yeah, only 19. Teenager. He's younger than me. 2 years younger than me.
Oh, 06 he was born? Oh, yep. No. Yeah. Oh,
Dax
no.
Kilby, you saw firsthand what Kevin McGonigal looked like. I want you to get a mental picture of it. I want Dax Kilby to just do everything that Kevin McGonigal's ever done in his life. Any final notes on LeGrande before we move on to the Hesh truck?
No, I think I'm good.
Well, I think Ben Hess. It's such a shame. Ben Hess is like, you guys watch Cars, right?
Yeah.
You know Chick Hicks, how like over time, like he's just like one of the most, he just never wins because of all the great drivers around him, of course, the king. And obviously I'm not saying Ben Hess is going to become bitter and do something incredibly amoral to win, but he is so not talked about because there are two guys who are ahead of him in a lot of prospect rankings, and I thought Hess looked awesome today. I was really impressed with him. I love the four-seam shape. The four-seam shape looks great with the release height. It's really a plus pitch. The changeup shape, there's a lot of vertical separation there. He picked up 11 swings and misses, 5 strikeouts. Jacob, we'll start with you here, man. What'd you see from Hess, from whether it's data or film, that you were like, hey, I like this, or things you wanted to see him do better?
Yeah, so first of all, unfortunately, I couldn't watch the game because, you know, the Gotham Sports app works about 20% of the time. I'm going to go on my little rant here. This thing, the Yes app was perfectly good. It worked. I logged in with my TV provider, my cable TV provider, and it worked. I could watch the game on my phone when I was doing whatever. I could watch on my computer. Now, You go to Yes during the spring, and the game's not on. They're doing the Nets replay from last night, which I'm a Nets fan. The Nets suck. I don't know why they got to replay our games, first of all. And then second of all, go on the app. Okay, it's not on Yes. I got to go on the app. The app doesn't work. It doesn't work half the time. I log in. I go on Twitter. Everyone's clowning on it. It's not working for anyone. Yes is putting out, like, PR tweets like, oh, we know it's a problem. I check back in 90 minutes later. It's still not working. So I didn't get to watch Ben Hess actually pitch. So all I have to go off of is the data. And I will say, the data looks pretty damn good. I'm happy with this. I think he comes off to me as a higher ceiling starting pitcher than Rodriguez, just because I feel like the breaking balls are a little bit more interesting. Like, Ryan has the sweeper, 27%, curveball, 13%, and they both break a ton. He's not a high velo guy. I think he was sitting like 93, 94 today. And the breaking balls are pretty slow too. But if he's locating them with that type of movement, it won't matter that much. The fastball is good enough shape for him to get away with the 93, 94. So I'm definitely excited to see him pitch because I haven't seen him pitch yet. So I want to hear you guys' thoughts too.
I saw him pitch. I mean, I don't live in New York, so I don't have those issues right now, at least. The curveball and sweeper sit at what, 75 to 77. It reminds me a lot of Parker Messick when I watch him pitch. I don't know if you guys watched any Parker Messick last year for the Guardians, but
I'd see a little bit of it. Un poquito.
Yeah, it feels just like Parker Messick with the other hand. I would have liked to see more strikes. I think his strike percentage was slightly lower than LeGrand Hayes, actually.
Yeah, last year their strike rate was either within 0.5% of each other, or Hess just was like narrowly behind.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess I would like to see more strikes, but of the three, struck out the most. I think he had the most whiffs as well, in three innings. You know, faced 13 hitters. So I like Ben Hess. I think he is a crafty enough righty, and I think his stuff is probably a little bit better than Elmer Rodriguez, but with one less pitch, right?
The way I look at Ben Hess is I view him as this enigma of a prospect in the sense that he has so many plus traits. He's got the incredibly low fastball release. It's a 29-degree arm angle. So for context, for those at home, his arm angle and release height are virtually identical to Will Warren's, and he gets 17 inches of ride on his fastball. And he's getting 6.8 feet of extension. So essentially, velocity-wise, similar to Warren. His upper-end velo is definitely higher than Warren's, but the sitting today was 93, 94. And he's got tons of ride on that pitch. This should be a swing-and-miss pitch at the top of the zone if he can get it there. If he can get it there being an issue for him throughout his career. His changeup, he was averaging about 13 inches of vertical separation off the changeup. The curveball was averaging it was ridiculous amounts of movement. It had, I think, 17 and a half inches of induced vertical break, which is ridiculous. Yeah, negative 17.3. The lateral, negative 16.5 inches of lateral movement. I mean, it's a remarkable mix. The one thing he's missing, in my opinion, he needs a bridge pitch. So you're gonna have the plot on screen for those at home. If you're listening to this on Apple or Spotify, I apologize. I don't know how to get a visual for you guys, just but
imagine it.
Yeah, there's a lot that moves there. If you look at a pitch plot, X, Y axis, there's a lot on like the far side of the X axis to the left and a lot on the far side of the X axis to the right. There's not anything that's really close to the middle. He has nothing that breaks on average less than 5 inches to the arm side or 5 inches to the glove side. He needs to find something in that range so he can complete his mix. Because if he does that, I don't see why he can't be a number three starter for a playoff team. If he does that, just that, the command is a whole other conversation. He doesn't need to improve the command. Today he was in zone, I think it was 30. Strike percentage was 58. In zone percentage was 35.4. So have to get in zone more. We have to find a way to get in zone more.
Is he getting a lot of chases, though?
Chases on the sweepers.
Yeah, a lot of chase on the sweepers. And, yeah, that was really it. Like, he just dotted when he had to.
He is really similar to Warren.
He really is very east-west. And that's the other thing I do want to... I don't love a slow sweeper. I've never been a fan of big, slow sweepers. I think, like, you need a little... You know, just... I like it a little bit sharper. But his sweeper location's actually pretty strong. Like, his commit... He doesn't really hang them a ton. He'll hang a couple of them, and that's where you get scared, because if you hang a 78-mile-per-hour sweeper, it's getting hit. But he's got... I mean, he's got tools, man. I really like Ben Hess, and I've... I'm happy that he pitched the way he did today, because I think there's gonna be a little more helium now.
Yeah, my note on that comp with Warren is very similar. Like, Warren's fastball was fantastic last year. It was, is in terms of run value, it was one of the best fastballs in the game. His issue is that his off speed and his breaking balls were just not doing it. And if Hess has that same fastball, the same four seamer, then all he really has to do is either find that bridge pitch or get to the point where those breaking balls are well located enough that they can be used on their own to get people off the fastball. So it's interesting. I definitely, now that I've seen their plots side by side, it is, he does feel a bit like a Will Warren type prospect, and that's a good prospect to have. That's someone you can work with. That's someone you can get to be that mid rotation type of arm.
If I told you, and this is where I kind of get confused with a lack of Ben Hess discourse, because it's not like he's a low draft. He's a first round pick. He's not a low draft pick. He's a first round pick. If I told you the Yankees draft the guy in the first round, and in his first pro season, he'd be fourth in FIP among minor league pitchers. In terms of strikeout rate, he'd be sixth at 33%. Strikeout to walk rate, he would be 11th at 22.1%. Opponent batting average, 7th, 175. Expected FIP, 294, 10th. Like, that's what Ben Hess was among every single minor league pitcher in baseball to throw at least 100 innings. So that's 288 pitchers. He was one of the best pitchers in minor league baseball last year as a first round pick. And he got from high A to double A. He might be a big leaguer this year. I just feel like there's not enough discourse around the fact that like, this is a first round pick. This is not a guy who, this is a guy who was drafted earlier than Lombard was, earlier than Volpe was, earlier than Wells was, earlier than Kilby was. He's, I think, one of their highest draft picks in like the last 5 years, 5-6 years. Cause he's the 23. He's the guy they got because they were bad in 23.
Yeah.
26th overall. He had a 5.80 ERA that year, so everyone was like, "Oh, nice going, Cashman." You picked,
he was an underslot
ERA from college, but it's like ERA doesn't matter in college.
If you want pain, look at the second round of the 2024 MLB draft. Look at the second round of that draft.
2024 MLB draft. Let's pull it up.
Yeah, search up that second round, and you're gonna feel pain because you're gonna see. Because I don't dislike Cunningham, but you're gonna see things happen here. The guy who gets selected two picks before Cunningham is Peyton Tolley, and the guy who gets selected two picks after is Ryan Sloan.
Oh, jeez.
And then later on, Cal Steven goes. Like, again, I'm not out on Cunningham.
I was looking at Tommy Tanks at the top. Remember when he had aura?
Oh, bro, I was tipped off to not, that the Yankees should not pick him solely because they're like, dude, he can't play a position. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
This isn't to say that I'm out on Cunningham. The pain part of this is not landing Sloan and totally going like just a few picks sooner. Because if you land either of those guys, you're sitting on either a top 10 prospect in Tolley when he graduated or like a top 30 right now in Sloan. So that's a little bit painful. But Hess is, if you look at that first round, how many guys are like picked around him who clearly performed better than he did?
Yeah, definitely out of the arms, I'm pretty happy we ended up with him.
Yeah,
I'm happy we ended up with him over Vance Honeycutt.
Could have ended up with that. Could have ended up with he could have ended up with a situation where
Savage is only six picks before though.
Yeah.
Morlando was not has had an interest. This is not a great start with Miami. Point is, like, I think Ben Hess is
definitely
Hess.
Definitely a plus pick so far. Definitely a quality pick.
I'm excited to see what he does.
You could say, oh, we missed out on Tolley, but it's like, yeah, you could say that about any draft.
I don't know if the word is, we just didn't get a chance. I mean, we didn't get a chance to pick him. But I don't know if we would have picked him, to clarify. I'm just saying, like, the only reason I mentioned that second round is because I know some guys went there. They're like, Cunningham was the guy the Yankees underslotted on Hess for. They took Hess thinking, okay, let's get Cunningham. That's also, like, a reason why I'm not out on Cunningham. I liked him way more than Legrandje Rodriguez and Hess going into the year. Not way more, but, like, narrowly above them. Just because I thought he looked like a pitcher. We'll see how he looks, but yeah, we haven't seen him yet in spring. Go ahead.
Was he throwing harder in college too than he did last year?
Yeah, he got to like 99, and then to start this year, I went to both of his, like, there's two Ben Hesses. There is the start of last year where he walks everybody and he misses a month of time and nobody knows what happened there. There's literally no public information. He never goes in the IL. He just misses a month of the year, comes back, first couple starts doesn't look great, and then just locks in and he looks like one of the best pitchers in the organization. Before he came back, he was sitting like 91, 92. And then he got it up to sitting around 94. And he does have plus extension, so it helps a little bit. We saw more 97s, 98s on the radar gun. He sat, I don't know where he sat in college, but I know he got up to 99. So.
Yeah, I mean, if he's sitting 94 and he can get up to like 97 if he needs it, then that's that fastball's going to be really special, man.
If he can sit 95 at any point in his professional career, I think he's going to be a frontline starter. So, yeah.
I'm excited. We got some arms, man.
Hey, we do. And they're all like right there.
I don't know. I don't know if it's on the outline, but Selvidge too. Selvidge was throwing some velo.
I'm going to save that for later because that was my big positive. I was really excited to talk. I'll get there. No, don't worry. We'll get there. Well, let's go to positives. Chris, do you have any notes on Hess that you want to mention before we transition here?
No, sir.
Then let's talk Brock Selvidge a little bit because that was my I was really excited about it. I had random notes here. I didn't want to spoil it, but Jacob, you're just a ball knower, so you get it. Brock Selvidge hitting 97 miles per hour on the radar gun is easily one of my two or three biggest positives of spring so far. This guy was trending towards non-prospect. The command's bad or was bad last year. Had a 60% strike rate. Fastball sucked last year. Has good breakers, but just nothing. It just wasn't. You can't even project a reliever role out of him at that point. Now he's throwing death balls and 90 mile per hour cutters and 95 sitting. He's probably not going to sit 95 as a starter, but I was really happy with what I saw there. Jacob, we'll go with you, and then we'll go to Chris after on Selvidge. Anything you want to add there?
No, I mean, you pretty much covered it all. I'm going to pull up his pitch chart now from that game because this is a guy who's kind of off my radar, and then instantly throws 97. It's he's back. Let's see what he can do.
I remember that breakout game, man. I remember that breakout game in 24. I got that dude's electric. And it's funny, he's so he's so animated. Did you guys see that he strikes out Max Clark and he's just going nuts on the mound after? It's
psycho.
I know Max probably loved that too, because he's just
is a psycho
get
too.
Loud.
But I love that. These are two guys who are roughly as old as each other and they're competing in spring training. You know, these are guys who are going to fight all in double A against each other to start this year. They're going to play in the Eastern League together. Max Clark's on one of the, I think that team won back-to-back titles, then lost to the Mets in the finals this past year. Somerset has a recent championship. They lost to the Tigers double A affiliate in 24. They're on great minor league teams. They're going to go out and compete and probably compete, maybe see each other in triple A. I love that stuff. But yeah, any Chris, any notes on my boy Selvidge?
No, sir. You got it.
Well, I think
profiles as a reliever.
Selvidge, you said?
Yeah.
I actually thought, so his command early in his career was this guy is a starter if he gets the stuff going. The command's tanked since his command when this outing wasn't very good either. So if the command's there, I think he can start. I genuinely think he can start. He has a changeup and sweeper he didn't show in this outing. I think he can start. I still think he can start, but at least there's a world where, it doesn't work as a starter. Now he could be a reliever. That was not something that existed last year. He was sitting 91. You can't put that in the bullpen and expect a good outcome. But I think the other note from that very game that was super important was seeing Spencer Jones absolutely tank one. They said it was 111.7, 408 feet. I don't buy it.
No way. That
was no shot.
Shot.
I look
shot.
At these home run distances all the time. 111, what was it? 111.32?
Yeah, that ball's crushed.
450.
He hit that ball out of the ballpark.
That shit was... everyone in the concourse was that thing's way... that thing was into the
fans
parking
lot. Not even giving courtesy run, just looking up like they're Randy Arozarena out there in the outfield.
Everyone made the comparison to the Shohei toe tap, but Chris clocked this too. The backswing.
Dude,
what did you see in the
backswing? It was just Juan, dude. It was 100% Juan.
Dude, Spencer Jones might be... what's his name? Well, the pitcher. Remember that pitcher for Cleveland where he did the mocking the batting stances? That's Spencer Jones right now, dude.
I think the headline here is Spencer Jones, Ohtani plus Soto in one package.
Yeah, a little bit of Ohtani.
Shout out whoever made that headline, man. Shout out them.
Dude, it was the backswing, dude, and the leaning back and just looking at it because he got literally all of it. That ball absolutely went 450.
Dude, I will say, he's a spring training demon. This has been multiple years now. Was that 2024, the year he came in? And everyone was like, he's got to get the whiff rate down. He changed his swing. He's going to get the whiff rate down. Then he didn't whiff all of spring. We're like, God, he's the best prospect ever.
And that is the final time where Spencer Jones ever had a big league hit tool. That was the final point in time.
Before the year before that, he was like 28% strikeout rate. Then after that spring, he has like 38% strikeout rate. The next year, like, oh, I guess that was fool's gold.
People kind of forget, though, like 2024, he got off to like a decent start and then it just collapsed. And he was like, oh, non-prospect, it's over. So like his first 11 games that year in 24, he hit 348, strikeout rate of 23.5%. And a 186 WRC plus, and then it just...
Didn't he finish with an OPS under 700 that year?
Under 800. Okay. Yeah, he was flirting with a sub 700. He was in the 600s for most of the year.
Did he get hurt that year, too? Was he playing through something?
No, he was legit healthy, just putting up all-time stinkers, striking out 40% of the time. Yeah.
I'm trying to... My note on Spencer Jones, which I mentioned this last week, is I'm kind of bought in on him as being like... A successful big leaguer in the Gallo profile, and it might be a little bit delusional for me to buy in this way, but I'm like, bring him up, let him play good center field defense, let him strike out 38% of the time, and let him hit 35 homers. Like, give me that all day. League average bat with 40 home runs.
Yeah, with danger, with pop in the bat, you know.
Yeah.
Look, he's got enough upside where you can't just throw him off the roster for a bubble reliever. Like, you have to get something back, or else at that point, it's probably better to just hold on and see if you get the outlier outcome. There are some guys who no one expected them to get to where they were, and then things just popped. Like, I don't want this is not he's not Aaron Judge, but Aaron Judge. I was watching your video about this, Jacob. Baseball Prospectus or Baseball America slid him to like 95 after his 2016 stint. Like, there were outlets that were writing about him the way that like Ben Hess is they were giving him Ben Hess prospect rankings. Mm-hmm. No, that's crazy.
And Judge is like, Judge was also the same age as Jones is now at the time when his prospects, he was kind of a post prospect at that point. Everyone was like, oh, I don't know about this guy. And then he had his 2017 and everyone was like, oh, he's the GOAT. So anything's possible. Like, Judge, like what happened with Judge, the development that happened with Judge is just not possible, man. It is like, I think I might say it in the video. I'm not sure if I did.
You did.
It's like the most unlikely developmental success in Major League history, in my opinion. To go from, to peak at like 31 on pipeline, and then before 2017, he was in like the 80s and 90s on all these lists. To go from that to like best player in baseball instantly is so unheard of in this sport. All these other guys, you think, like, Trout was the number one prospect at a certain point. Harper was number one prospect. Judge was never up there. And he became the best player of the generation just because he hit his top potential outcome. And that's why you're always going to take the chance on someone with Jones who has the tools.
The guy would
pass his best potential outcome. I mean, like, to be a batting champion, I don't think anybody had that in the Cardinals.
Oh, yeah, ridiculous.
Aaron Judge is so good, man.
The one other, like, this is kind of a weird one, but I want to throw this out here because I think it's fascinating. I wonder what the conversation around Jazz Chisholm was his final year as a prospect, because he had a 15.5% swinging strike rate and a 32% strikeout rate in AA, and then he just got called up and got blown away in the big leagues a little. 2021 was a below average hitter, struck out a ton, and then it just kind of clicked. And he's also like, we talked about this a little bit, Jacob, like off air, but like Jones is a chase guy. He doesn't make great swing decisions. I wonder if there's a way to either clean up the swing decisions by making him a little more patient, or by just saying, screw it, like just go hammer what you can and let pitchers throw pitches in the dirt to you that you're never going to swing at, even if you don't have a disciplined swing because you're a big threat at the plate. I am curious what Spencer Jones is this year.
I think he has, my whole thing with him is the reason I would definitely have him top 100, even if it's the 100th spot or 99th spot, just because the ceiling is so high. And he's been successful. Like, his stats in AA and AAA are so good. He's produced so well against really good pitching in AA and AAA. Obviously, the jump to MLB is a whole different story, but the fact that he's produced at that level and he has so many different pathways to figuring it out as a hitter. Like, again, he's only been a full-time hitter for, what, 3 seasons now? Because he was a two-way player in college. Like, if he improves the contact to the point where he's not a 20 grade, he's a 30 grade, he's probably a good MLB hitter. If he improves the chase and he's drawing a lot of walks and striking out a little bit less, he's probably a good MLB hitter. So it's like, these are difficult things to do, but he has multiple opportunities here in multiple different avenues to improve. And like a guy like Judge, he ended up improving all of them to the point where he's the best. And Jones really only has to improve one thing as a hitter to become an MLB caliber bat, in my opinion. And I think even though he is on the older side for a prospect, I'm not going to give up on him for that reason, because he's already produced at the highest minor league level, and he has so many different places that he can grow.
I think that's fair. I'm the pessimist probably on this panel on Jones. I think I'm at the point where it's like, he's got to prove to me, like, he's got to prove it now. He's got to prove to me that he's an outlier. I believe in precedent maybe a little too much with prospects, where it's like, I've never seen it before.
Yeah, and I
just not going to think you're going to do it.
Fair, but I think the part of it that's unfair is that the only precedent is really like Gallo in terms of being ranked that high and having that type of tool set. And Gallo was still a pretty solid player for a few years.
I think in order to do this, you also have to recognize that there are things we can't know, and that is how you adjust to big league pitching. And you are there is no precedent until there is, right? Yes. There is nobody. There was nobody who struck out who was as tall as Aaron Judge, who lasted until their mid-30s. And the Yankees still gave him that contract. And even if he sucks the rest of his career, it was worth it to get those years of contention where he put this team on his back at times and just went. It's unprecedented until it isn't.
We are in a new era where hitting coaching is tailored to the player. And the way that Jones goes to Teacher Man, who helped Judge out going into that 2017 season. Obviously, I'm not going to say he's going to fix Jones' swing and make him into an MLB caliber bat. But just the idea of there's so many more ideas out there, so many more ways of thinking out there to try to... He's going to go through 100 different things before he's a flame out because the ceiling is so high. He's going to have so many opportunities to fix things. And I think that wasn't present in the past. A guy who struck out this much 10 years ago, Gallo was the only one, and he kind of rose through fast enough at a young enough age to get there. And before that, if you struck out that much, you just weren't going to have a chance. So the idea of he's going to have infinite opportunities while he's with the org, and he doesn't really have much of a spot on this roster now, but maybe 2027 he'll be a starting player if he does figure it out in the minors this year. So I'm excited. I'm going to keep that excitement as long as he's here.
Yeah, and I think again we'll see what it ends up looking like. He'll be interesting to he'll be fascinating and interesting to watch throughout the year for a multitude of reasons. We'll finish up with Luis Seo real quick here because he made his first start of spring training, and I think he's one of the biggest like what ifs on this team, both for good and bad. Chris, we'll start with you here. He delivered 2 2/3 innings pitched, 1 earned run, struck out 4, didn't walk anybody. What'd you see from this start? Good,
he
bad?
Got 97, like, yeah, man. He got, yeah, up to 97. He did. Got up to 97. I am hopeful about Luis Seo this year. I was really out on him at the end of last year, like really out on him. The velo was down so much, the control wasn't getting there, and he just didn't feel like a very good big league pitcher to me. I wondered if he was going to be a guy that was going to end up being a bullpen guy later on, and it just looked so different than kind of the first half of the rookie of the year season. But it looked encouraging enough for me to kind of not be all the way in. I'm not ready to get hurt again, but I'm like looking at the girl from across the street, like, okay, like maybe.
I think in contrast, I'm as out of on him as I've been. Like I want this guy to be kind of our fifth or sixth starter until guys get back, and then I don't know. I don't want him making more than a 10 starts this year, if possible. And obviously, if he shows more, then that'd be great. But I don't know. The stuff didn't move me that much. Like,
I'm glad the velo's back, though, Jacob. Does that not move you at all? Like, not even an inch?
I think I said it before we started recording. Entering 2024, he was, like, at 100 at this point in the spring. Like, he was touching 100. And I was like, oh, this guy is, like, competing for this job.
No, he was definitely punching shit for real.
And now it's like, I'm not going to be over the moon for him touching 97, because even if he was at 97 when he first got back last year and it wasn't working, and then he dropped it down to like 95, 94 and it really wasn't working.
Well, then he got down to like 93, didn't he?
Yeah,
like, I remember watching him start with Ryan where it was ugly, but
oh, dude, I'm not excited for him. Hopefully he can salvage something out of this. People have been like, oh, let's move him to the bullpen. I don't think his stuff will work in the bullpen either.
What went so wrong with him, out of curiosity? What do you guys both think?
Just injury. Whatever injury he had
He had the lat.
I wonder. I also think like time off mechanically. Mechanics are a big part of throwing hard, right? You have to be mechanically efficient to throw hard. I don't think I can trust Luis Hill to repeat mechanics with a long time off. Like, it feels like something changes every year unintentionally. And the thing I track for this, look at the pitch shapes. So let's go year by year here, right? First year he comes up, 2021. Slider, fastball, doesn't have much of a changeup. But look at the slider shape. Slider shape is different. We never see the slider again. Intentional, unintentional, we have never seen the best version of his slider again. Not last year, not his rookie of the year. Like, his slider has never performed better than it did that year, in my opinion. 37% whiff rate was just dominant. The shape of his fastball in 2025 is different than the one we see in 2024. 2024, 17 inches of ride, 5.6 inches of arm side. In 2025, it's 2 inches of arm side movement, 16.3 inches of ride. So that pitch shape changes. The slider shape goes from 8 inches of lateral this past year when it was 6 inches of lateral the year prior. And apparently, like, he used that new grip Sevy taught him. He just doesn't throw that slider again. That slider isn't there anymore. The changeup movement changed a little bit. It just, he doesn't feel like he can repeat mechanics. And this ties to velocity in the sense that I'm not sure whatever he found to throw hard as shit that year, I'm not sure he, I don't know if he can get back to it. I have to see him get back to it.
I'm not sure he knows what it was that got him there.
Right, so I'm not saying this like, oh, he's an idiot, he's this. Like, mechanics are difficult. They're really hard. And obviously, repeating mechanics is a problem for him because he can't consistently get in zone.
We've seen three distinct versions of him. We had the
pre-Tommy
John, we had the 2024, and then we had last year. So it's like, I definitely want to see. I have to see it to believe it with him, especially because he walks the world. It's like, the walks in his start yesterday was nice, but other than that, it's like I'm not taking that much out of that.
He's gotta show me something. He's gotta show me something this year. He's in prove it mode, and it's kind of like there's one player that I want to like point at who went through a year where he was like, dude, what the hell happened to this guy? Dealing with injuries all year. It's not Rodon. I'm gonna point to Nestor because Rodon had a track record of being an elite starter for a few years before the injury happened. I'm looking at Nestor because everyone wondered, is 2022, are you a 1 year wonder or are you legit? And while 2024 was not a return to dominance of 2022, he was a very important player on that team. He did so much for that team in terms of taking the ball every fifth day, performing at the level he did. He made adjustments. He added. He got better throughout the year. Can I get that from Hill? Like, where I see a return to being a productive pitcher. The Yankees don't need Luis Hill to take the ball in game two of a playoff series. They need him to be a reliable middle to back end rotation guy. That's what they need. So I don't know if you guys have anything else you want to add on Luis Hill. I think that, again, like, the fact he threw strikes was great, but it's a long road before we know what he is at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I hope he's better than last year. That's all I'll say.
Has to be, or else he's not.
Last year. He has to be.
He's not going to be in the big leagues if he doesn't.
He had a 3.32 ERA last year. That looks pretty good to me.
Like, dude.
Ryan got killed for Crosby last year. Like, got destroyed.
Bro, I remember saying Schlittler should get the ball over him in a playoff start. And
Ryan got called racist in every language.
I was getting called like I had an issue with Dominican ball players.
Yeah.
Ryan hates those Dominicans, man.
I don't know if anyone's ever watched me talk about the World Baseball Classic.
Dude,
like,
has. I remember because that's when you and I started doing some of the post-game stuff.
Yes. I was like, dude, are you serious? Like,
dude, I couldn't believe it.
I couldn't believe it either, but
I can't wait until our first episode, once the WBC is on, he's going to show up with like the flag behind them.
I see this like meme of like, it's like dudes mention the Dominican in situations they don't have to. And like, that kind of hit a little too personal. I was like, damn. Like, I saw this interview. It was like a boxer. He's like, how'd you feel after your fight? Yeah, I was tired. I'm Dominican. It's like, I'm like, shit, bro. That is fucking spot on, dude. Spot on. And I will make it clear, my mood in these podcasts will be heavily affected by the World Baseball Classic. If DR gets knocked out in the first round again, which if they this year would be worse, way worse, because the teams they play suck. There's one good team in that pool. If they get knocked down the pool round, I don't know if I'm showing up, guys. You guys might have to rock one without me. I don't know. I might
rock one out.
I might be depressed.
I'll rock out unless it snows again.
Dude. Well, you know what? First week of the WBC, we're getting snow. Dude, the weather's been brutal. It's been bad. But, hey. We appreciate everyone listening. We appreciate everyone tuning in, checking out Fireside Yankees. If this is your first time watching, make sure you like, subscribe, turn on that notification bell. You can check us out on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, and of course this YouTube page. We have audio episodes, whether it's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, really wherever you get your podcasts, Fireside Yankees is there. And you guys can support the work that Chris and Jacob do. Chris on Fireside Baseball and Dead Air Sports, links in the description below, and Jacob on And That's Baseball. He just dropped the video turning the clock back to the 2016 prospect class, and I was watching that while eating some lunch. Got to finish this while I eat dinner. It's one of those videos that, like, it's a good when you get the refresh and it pops up in the feed when you're eating something. It's lovely, man. So
I appreciate it, man.
We'll have links to everything in the description. You guys stay safe, stay warm. We'll see you guys in the next one. Peace out, everybody.
Perfect.